This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Guys, welcome to I Do Podcast.
Thank you for joining us. If this is your first time listening, thank you. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Chase.
And
her husband.
We're the hosts of I Do Podcast. And if this is your 150th episode or whatever number we're on, welcome back.
Yeah. Thank you for being such a loyal listener. We have a really important and valuable episode today, and I want to just tell you about Dr. Rhoda Lipscomb and give you her bio because it's quite impressive. She is an alternative sexuality specialist, certified sex therapist, and clinical sexologist with her PhD in clinical sexology. Didn't know that was a PhD. She is an author, teacher, public speaker, and has been counseling and consulting with individuals and couples in the area of human sexuality for over 25 years. And today we talk about designing the best relationship style by understanding your sexual personality type. And we get into a lot of things, but mainly just the conversation around sexuality and how it's shaped by our culture, a lot of you guys listening in the West, and it's shaped in a certain way that can put a lot of negativity and shame around it. And Dr. Rhoda talks about how we can have discussions with our partner and talk about our desires, our fantasies, not feel like we're judged, and to be open to different things and how to have communication around that. And one of the things, just to give you a little preview, is the BDSM checklist. So, yeah, Sarah and I actually
like, what is that?
Yeah, it's basically going to be a list of different sexual positions, scenarios, role play, you name it. But to go through, and Dr. Rhoda gives an exercise on rating these things and communicating with your partner around it and just opening up that conversation around it. And then we even get into talking about the different styles of relationship outside of monogamy. And it's becoming more and more socially acceptable in our culture to talk about things like an open relationship, polyamory, and Dr. Rhoda has extensive experience counseling couples in these kinds of relationships and knowledge about the clinical studies on this. And it's really fascinating stuff. So even if you're in a committed monogamous relationship, you don't want to, you know, open up the relationship. It's just important things to understand and realize and it's going to help you in your monogamous relationship.
Yeah. And if this is your first time listening, this may feel very overwhelming to you. Maybe you don't even feel comfortable about bringing these conversations up with your partner. So if that is you, if you feel like you need a little help even initiating this conversation, go back to our episode 131 on learning how to communicate about your sex life. And in that episode, Dr. Lori Watson gives us a lot of tips to be able to just initiate it and feel comfortable about talking with your partner. And then once you get past that, then maybe bring up this checklist, you know, because for some people, just all of a sudden handing this checklist to your partner and you've never had these conversations before might be a bit of a challenge or not as easy to transition into being more open about your sexuality and talking about it. So check out that episode as well before if you find that that might help you.
Yeah. And as always, we appreciate you guys listening. If you listened to last week's episode, we talked about the Hood River Couples Retreat. Go to idopodcast.com. You can check that out. And we are really excited about it. It is such a beautiful place. We are enjoying it. We're actually here right now, and we can't wait to share it with some of you guys. And also the 14-day couples challenge, we're approaching 3,000 people that have taken this challenge, and it's not incredibly challenging. It's actually just
it's really fun,
simple activities that you can do every day, really just from your home on the computer to learn about them and then help strengthen your relationship. So you can also sign up for that on the website.
And Chase mentioned the Hood River Couples Retreat is on our website. If you click on the retreats tab up at the top, it's all the information is right there. But the dates are July 28th through August 2nd. So we are getting close, and there are a few more spots left. So if you want to grab them before they're gone, then head on over to our website right now. So as always, thank you guys for listening and sending us your feedback. We appreciate you guys, and enjoy the episode. Today's show is brought to you by our Hood River Couples Retreat. Join us in Hood River, Oregon this summer, July 28th through August 2nd. The retreat is built to be the ultimate vacation for couples looking to have fun, try new things, and build a stronger relationship in paradise. We'll be doing activities like waterfall hikes, rafting, wine tastings, and so much more. For more information, visit our website at idopodcast.com/Hood River. Hi, Dr. Rhoda. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm happy to be here.
Dr. Rhoda, we've given our listeners a little overview, told them about your work. Why don't you take a minute, tell us about yourself and why you enjoy helping people improve their sex lives and personal sexuality?
Well, thank you. I've been in the areas of working in sexuality for about 25 years. So I've been counseling and doing therapy in that area for a long time. And over the years, it's evolved to where I've kind of niched down to more of the alternative communities, working with people who identify as BDSM or kinks or fetishes or open relationships, so that I've gotten to a point where I really specialize in that. It's what I know best, and it's what I really enjoy working on. And it's an area of sexuality that is, it doesn't get as much attention. And yet a lot of people, I think, especially these days, are starting to look for other options and other ways of forming relationships and designing relationships that are different from what most of us have been brought up to believe is the norm and the way it's supposed to be. And so people really need help to be able to make these types of relationships more successful. So that's a lot of how I've kind of gotten into it. And the topic on, you know, sexual personality types is really taking a lot of the new research and the new theories and kind of running with it and melding things together. A lot of the sexuality research, unfortunately, gets done by graduate students, those doing their master's degrees and doctoral degrees, which, while it's wonderful that they're doing that, it's, you know, it's different than when you have experienced researchers who've been doing this for decades, and because there isn't funding for this type of research. If it doesn't relate to pharmaceuticals, people don't want to fund it.
Yeah, it is important stuff. And I know you're going to help Sarah and I and our listeners today. And I want to zero in. You mentioned sexual personality type. So let's talk a little bit about that. What is a sexual personality type?
Well, thanks for asking that. A sexual personality type is really looking at the person's personality of how they really are more naturally leaning towards one type of sexual relationship style versus another. Because what I started noticing was that there are some people who just very naturally seem to be comfortable in monogamy, even when they're not trying to just go by the social expectations. That's just naturally where they gravitate to. Even if they've tried other things, they've tried open relationships, they end up coming back to that just because it's what fits them. While other people can try very hard to fit that social expectation, and yet they're always feeling a sense of it's not quite enough, or sometimes they're the people you see who keep having extramarital relationships on the side just because they're trying so hard to make it work, and yet it's just not them. They need more. They need more variety. And so I started thinking about, well, why is this? Why do some people feel more comfortable one way than another? And I've come across some research through some of the professional organizations that I belong to, and started doing a little research on my own, and realized that there really does appear to be this kind of sexual personality type that people tend to fall into. And initially, I've put it into three different types. There's what are called the monosexual people, who really are the ones who do the best in some version of exclusive, what we call monogamy. The polysexual people, who need some variation of open relationship, and that can vary. And then what I like to call the adapters. And the adapters are kind of this rare breed where they can actually go back and forth between from either a monosexual to a polysexual type of relationship. And they don't seem to miss the unique aspects of those other types. The true monosexuals and the true polysexuals, if you try to put them back after being comfortable, they don't fit very well. They really don't. Where the adapters seem to be able to do it, which is a very unique aspect to that. And when I came across some other research, there was a scale. They called it the monogamy spectrum, which personally I think is a terrible name. That's like taking the Kinsey scale, which relates to sexual orientation, and calling it, you know, the heterosexuality spectrum. Not a great name, but it's basically like the Kinsey scale, at 0 to 6, relating to levels of comfort with relationship exclusivity. And I realized that when I kind of put the two together, they fit really well, because if you take the monosexuals, who are the 0s to 1s, you know, 0s are the ones who absolutely must have strict monogamy. And the 1s are those ones that are sort of, it's a new term I've heard of lately, where they call it monogamish. Mostly they're monogamous, but yet they'll have some few exceptions here. And those are your 1s. And then you have your adapters, who are kind of like the 2, 3s, and 4. And depending on how well they adapt, some might lean more towards the monosexual side, some may lean more towards the polysexual side, and then you have those 3s who are right there in the middle, kind of like on the Kinsey scale, where you have the 3s who are considered the perfect bisexual. They can be in a relationship with either gender and be perfectly happy. And then the 5s and the 6s are the polysexual people. These are the people that they need some version of open. They need some version of whether it's polyamory or swinging or a relationship designed unique for them that and their partners. They need that variety. They just feel too caged in with what we consider traditional monogamy. And so when you put them both together, I think it works really well.
Well, Dr. Rhoda, this is a great place to start. And I actually kind of want to take a bit of a step back. And this is all very interesting to me, and I'm sure our listeners, but to maybe put this in some context, because I think especially our listeners out there who are longtime listeners, they're very used to us discussing relationship problems in the context of a monogamous relationship, more than likely. And I say that because that is what is the cultural norm in the United States and a lot of the West. But that conversation is changing. And when I started to become aware of this a few years ago, actually through a podcast, it was like a revelation to me, because here's a huge part of how we're raised and the society that we're in. And there's so much, I think, shame in around sexuality and around just the concept of not being in a monogamous relationship. So I started to read more, and I read some interesting anthropological studies and some books, and I feel like it's actually a great tragedy is a bit of a strong word, but a sad thing that we've repressed sexuality and the society's openness to alternative relationships outside of the norm of monogamy. And it's great to be having this conversation and that this is becoming more of a conversation, because I think it's an important thing. So anyways, I just wanted to give that background, and maybe you can comment on that, and then we can keep diving in, because I think it's fascinating. But what are your thoughts? Sure. And how does that resonate?
I mean, that resonates very true with me, is that the whole kind of concept of strict monogamy is a more modern, and by modern I mean like in the historical history of humankind, it's like the last couple of hundred years. So it's a more modern type of belief system, and this belief system of soulmate and the one person. I mean, you hear it in the love songs and the movies and the novels, and that, the one and only, like of all the millions of people on the earth, there's only one person who could be your beloved. It's a very romanticized notion that we've had the last probably couple hundred years, but wasn't anthropologically the way human beings mated traditionally. And, you know, in the 60s and 70s, when you had the free love and what referred to as the swinging 70s, when people were trying a lot of new types of things, there wasn't much support. There wasn't much help of figuring out how to make these work, which I think is why a lot of them tended to fail, because they were trying to create these new things without much support behind them. And now that they're starting up again, I think in like the last 20 years, I mean, the term polyamory just started about in the mid-1990s. So when it started up again, now we have more people starting to look at it and go, how do we support this? How do we help people to do this in a way where they can be successful? And because you do have to be a strong enough person that you can sort of fight the social norm that still doesn't 100% support it. Though I think it's getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so cliche, but knowledge is power, and there's more information than ever before with podcasting and the internet, obviously. And like I said, that's how I came into this. It started with my realization of how sexually repressed I had been programmed by my upbringing. And I didn't come from a conservative family at all, very free thinking, traveling the world. Like, it was not like a repressed conservative family. So I can imagine there's spectrum here. But I just realized, just from being raised in the South, or really it could be anywhere in the United States, and how much negativity is around sexuality, and then extending that to relationships. And we could do a whole podcast series on this and the role religion and has played and all of that. And it's all very interesting. But we're going to zero in and try to have some focus here.
And I do have one question about the personality, the categories that you talked about before we continue on, and that's that of the adapter.
Sure.
Do you mind, I feel like monosexual and polysexual is very self-explanatory, but when it comes to the adapter, generally what makes them be an adapter? Like why are they comfortable with being monogamous at one time versus maybe being in an open relationship the other time? Is it because of the person they're currently dating, or is it maybe just a person, their personal reasons?
I wish I had a good reason for that, because I think part of it, at least, this is such cutting edge research that we don't have a lot that's really focused on how come the adapters are different, how come they're able to make those shifts and feel comfortable. And part of what I'm hoping to accomplish with this is to get more graduate students aware of it, and so that they can kind of run with some of this and do that kind of research of like, wow, these people who are the adapters, how do they do that? How do they manage to make those changes and not miss the unique aspects of those various types of relationships? Because I don't think we really know yet why those people can do that without more serious research on the topic.
So
I wish I had a good. and another thing I've noticed too is that it's not just that. There's also this the younger generation, the millennials. There's larger numbers of them who are more interested in some type of open relationship, or at least less interested in real strict monogamy. As well as when you look at race, people of Caucasian descent tend to choose monogamy more as their ideal style, more than African American or Hispanics in our country. And what is that about? Like, when you throw those factors into it, it's not just the age of people, such as millennials or as baby boomers or Gen X, but then you add race in, and that's another factor that has to be figured in, because that seems to play into it as well.
Yeah, like you said, there's certainly so much more information needed on this to fully understand the mechanisms that are going on. But I think if people can just realize, like so many things in life, not just the relationship, but to try to keep a holistic perspective and be aware of the cultural influences that are pressing on us when it comes to sexuality and relationships, and whether you're a single listener or you're in a serious relationship, a committed relationship, sometimes these things might be hard to think about, but I think it's important to and you might be just like I'm monogamy, it's easy, like this is the way I'm supposed to be, but maybe your partner doesn't feel comfortable and they want to talk to you about it, but they're afraid to bring it up. And all of these, obviously there's all these situations. And I think that's the real, one of the sad things about this is that it's such a taboo subject. So that kind of leads me into asking, how can a partner bring up, maybe they're in a monogamous relationship and they want to explore any variation of openness, and we could talk about the different variations, but how can they start that conversation with their partner?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And that's often the thing that, unfortunately, so often it becomes this issue of, it comes up because there's some sort of explosion in the relationship. One partner finds the other one engaging and looking at things online that they're not sure they're completely comfortable with. And, one person has an affair, whether a real affair or more of an emotional affair. And they end up having to have this discussion that way. Occasionally I have seen people where they just finally will sit the other one down and say, look, we, we want to talk about this because I'm not feeling completely comfortable. I'm having thoughts, I'm having feelings, I'm having desires for something more. And I don't want to cheat. I don't want to force us to go through that type of issue and pain. So we need to address this. And I mean, I really admire when people do that because it just takes so much personal strength to be that completely honest with your partner. Because we, as a society, don't always, we say we encourage it, but we don't always really encourage it. There's a lot of this kind of conformity that goes on more than being that truly strong and vulnerable with our partner and taking the risk that they're going to say, no, I want to, because so many people will easily say, no, I just want a divorce. Like, that's it. It's not working. If it's not my way, it's got to be the other way. And I see that so often, that it's just this strict, rigid issue without questioning it. And so when I see people who do that, I admire it so much. Because usually it does tend to have a better outcome if you can just be upfront.
If we have repressed feelings in a relationship, it's not good for you personally, and it's not good for the relationship. So it might be a hard conversation to have, but in the end, it's going to be the right one. And like I said, I just think hopefully this podcast and the work you're doing and the direction that this conversation is moving, hopefully it just becomes easier and easier for people to talk about. And I tell Sarah, you know, maybe one day, like our daughter who's two, like it's not even going to be a question. It's just another type of relationship. It's like, yeah, sure, they're married and they're right. Open. And it's not even like this thing. And I know it's probably going to take longer than that, but I think ultimately, hopefully we can work towards that. And before we talk more about, I certainly want to dig into open relationships, and we set a good foundation, but maybe can we talk about just alternative sexuality, it can be in an open relationship, but in a monogamous relationship, and how I feel like that's also being repressed. So partners that are maybe interested in kink or fetishes, maybe talk about that.
Before we continue, we want to tell you about today's sponsor.
If only Grove Collaborative existed when we had our daughter Stella about 3 years ago, it would have saved me a huge headache. Like we shared in last episode, we are very conscious parents, and that's why it was an easy choice that we didn't want Stella to come into contact with toxic chemicals that are often found in house cleaning products and toiletries and stuff like that.
But not in Groves.
Yeah, not in Grove. And that's why we're so excited to be working with them.
If you don't know Grove already, then you should. Grove sells only the best non-toxic products. So when I shop on their website, I'm confident that I'm selecting items that are not only good for me and my family, but also the planet.
So now that we are Grove VIP members,
what?
We are finding that it is super easy to order what we want, and it's not expensive, and all thanks to the Grove Collaborative platform. And not only does it have brands that we already trusted, like Burt's Bees, I love their chapstick, my lips are like constantly chapped because I'm always in the sun, but also Seventh Generation, and everything they sell is vetted to be the best all-natural products around.
I'm currently obsessed with the glass cleaner because Stella loves wiping her dirty, sticky hands all over our sliding glass window. So I'm constantly cleaning them. And I hate the idea of spraying harsh chemicals to clean them and then touch them with my skin. So Grove allows me to clean them knowing that we're all going to be safe. So it's a win-win. And I'm also loving the lavender scent of their Miss Meyer soap. It is to die for. And it makes my house smell so amazing, like a spa. So if you haven't tried Grove already, then you need to today. Our listeners who sign up get an amazing 30-day Miss Myers gift set and a free 60-day VIP membership when you sign up and place an order of $20 or more. So check out Grove for our special offer at grove.co/I do. That's grove.co, not.com/I do.
Sure. And there's lots of ways of having a relationship that's still monogamous, but isn't, well, what a lot of people like to refer to as vanilla. There are a lot of partners who engage in whether it's BDSM or other types of kinks and fetishes to spice things up, to make it more interesting, more variety. I think the one good thing that's come out of the whole 50 Shades of Grey books was that kind of thought process of how do you think about spicing it up? I don't think that series is written very well, and particularly anybody who knows about BDSM would tends to cringe at the books. But I think what it did do was it got the public thinking about, oh, there are different ways of doing this besides just it has to be the typical boring, if you're in a monogamous relationship, then therefore it has to be boring and stale. It's like, no, there are ways of livening it up. And I've had times where I've given people, there's this thing in the BDSM world. I always tell people if people in the monogamy world had as much communication about their sexual desires and interests and were willing to explore as much as the people in open relationships and kink and fetishes, they would have so much better sex lives. Because that's the one thing that community really has over the traditional monogamy community, is because they talk about their sexual desires. They talk about what their fantasies might be or what interests them and what are hard limits and what are areas where, I'll try that. I don't know if I'll like it, but let's try it a couple of times. See if we like it. You know, there's just this more willingness to explore and try things. And they have what's called a BDSM checklist, which is literally this list of everything you can imagine and even a few things maybe you can't imagine. But it gives couples a way of looking at it and checking it off and saying, this I'll try, this I won't, this I don't even know what it is. Maybe we can look it up. And, you know, it gives them a way of exploring that we don't traditionally do. It isn't even the way I was trained to do it in sex therapy. There were no tools like that. I had to make this one up. I adapted it from the BDSM world. And most typical couples look at me like I'm some sort of strange animal by having them to talk about what might interest them sexually that's different. And yet, if you're going to have sex with the same person for 30 or 40 years, aren't you going to get kind of bored? like it'd be like having pizza every night for dinner.
Yeah.
I don't care how much you love pizza, it's going to still just be pizza. Like, you got to spice it up a little.
Do you have that checklist that we could maybe put out there for our listeners to look at, just for those that are interested and want to learn more?
Sure. Well, actually, if they wanted to go online and just download a BDSM checklist, if you Google BDSM checklist, there's several versions on the internet, and it's very easy to just kind of adapt it and be like, this is what I'm willing to do. This is like absolutely not. Don't even ask. And then you rate the various areas on sort of a 1 to 5, 1 being not my favorite thing in the world to do, but I know you really love it, so I'll do it for you sometimes. All the way up to 5 being, oh, absolutely, I would do that as much as you want. So it's a nice communication tool.
It's funny how...
I can certainly send you my copy if you want, but it's easy to just even download it.
Perfect, yeah.
Because there's lots of them available.
Well, we'll for our listeners who that maybe sparks their attention, we'll put that on your show notes page, a link to that, so that they can they can check that out.
Okay. So I will email it to you.
Perfect.
That seems like a great place to start for the couple out there, the individual that's listening. That's like, yeah, we need to spice it up. Is check out this checklist and like you said, go through it and rank it. Seems like a great exercise. Are there any other things that a couple can do to kind of, or on an individual basis, to maybe get to know themselves sexually, but like what they like? Because like I said, I feel like it's so repressed that there's sides of themselves that they don't even realize are there. How can they explore that?
I mean, if someone likes to read, I always encourage them to read different types of erotica. Sample stuff and see what triggers any interest. Some people like to look at some of the more visual erotica. And some people like the stuff that's the home, not the professionally made, but the videos that people will make of themselves and post online. They feel like it's more real. It's not scripted. It's real people, real bodies. And it gives people ideas. Let's see. There are lots of great books, like just educational sexual books. You know, it started with The Joy of Sex back in the 70s, but if they go to the library, there's a wide range of books these days that give people a lot of ways of starting to rethink about it and relook at things. I always tell couples, it's your relationship. It doesn't have to look like anybody else's. And so sometimes people are afraid to step outside the box of what they think their marriage is supposed to look like, because they think it's supposed to look like their parents or their siblings or their neighbors or their best friends. And it's like, I mean, it doesn't already. Every relationship is unique. So why not take charge of it and make it unique in a way that feeds both of you, so that you're both staying in this relationship because you want to, not because you made some commitment a decade ago. I think those are the relationships that tend to last.
So for our listeners who maybe take you up on that and they start to have that open conversation with their partner, and maybe one is connecting more with being polysexual, so wanting to try an open relationship, but the other person is like, no, that's not for me. How do you address that going forward if one person is, you know, really wanting to make a change in the relationship?
Those are very tough conversations. And that's when you get into what I like to call designer relationships, where if they're going to make it work, it's got to be designed for them. And you can have an agreement where, like, I've worked with couples where, let's say, one of them is really into BDSM and the other one is absolutely not. And the one who's into BDSM doesn't want their partner to do anything they don't want to do, so then it doesn't really work to try to get that person up to speed in something that is not in their wheelhouse. So then the only way someone in the BDSM can make it work is if they have an additional partner. And having those conversations of, look, you know, you can't really put this genie back in the bottle. And if you don't want the type of dynamic where there's sneaking around and cheating, then how do we do this honestly and openly and consent? And how do we negotiate it so that both of you are feeling comfortable enough, but both of you are getting your needs met? And I've worked with people on it. It's difficult conversations because you've got to be able to support both sides. You've got to be able to support the one who says, I don't know that I really want this. And let the other, well, you don't have to do this, but that might mean your options are either you let them have another person and you negotiate it, or you end the relationship and you start over and find somebody who wants what you say you want. And how do you feel about that? And those are very difficult conversations, but I've seen it be successful. It's sometimes amazing what people are willing to negotiate when they really want that relationship to survive.
It is a measure of success in a relationship a lot of times by the amount of difficult conversations you're having. If you just go through and this is related to all aspects of the relationship, and this is sexuality is a big part. And I feel just from personal experience, and I'm excited moving forward in our relationship that Sarah and I have had, we've been together almost 10 years, but we haven't had a whole lot of open discussions about sexuality. And again, this is coming from, we aren't overly conservative people. We're living in another country. We're very free thinking. And it just makes me realize like how much a product of the culture that we all are, and a culture that has had this sexual repression built into it and shame. And obviously there's every individual is different, and I don't want to project what everyone might be feeling, but I know I certainly have. And so, going back to having these difficult conversations, because repressing it is not going to make you happy. And in the end, like you said, it can lead to an explosion, whether it's cheating or you might have, resent your partner for not letting you explore it. And it's just not a good way to go through life or in a relationship. And so it's a positive thing in the end to be able to have these conversations.
It is. And you're right. It's difficult. And we don't always encourage people to have these incredibly difficult conversations that are frightening and painful, because we fear what's going to be on the other side. And yet if you don't have them, oftentimes it can be worse than actually going through it and having them.
And I agree with, you saying you're afraid of what's going to, be on the other side. And a lot of the times, like Chase said, like we've been together for 10 years and we haven't had too many sexual conversations until recently. And now that we're kind of starting to peel back those layers and talk about it more, I feel like it's made us connect even more on a deeper level because we know even more about each other. But yet it's kind of silly looking back and being like, oh, I didn't want to talk about that because I'm afraid to hear what he's going to say. And in reality, it's kind of crazy to think that you're afraid of what your partner is going to say. If anything, it should bring you closer together.
Yeah. And it is very true because it's, we get to the point where we fall in love with this person and we decide we want to be with them. And then the thought that, if I'm too honest, they might not like me. They might not love me anymore. They might leave, holds so many of us back. I mean, I know my husband and I did it in our own marriage early on and it's the thing that nearly destroyed us. And it wasn't until we finally started having a lot more honest conversations that our marriage really flourished, and we're so much closer now than we were in those early years of our marriage because both of us were too afraid to say what we really wanted.
I know when we're done with these conversations, when Sarah and I have them, like she said, I just feel almost like a weight is lifted off my shoulders because I have, these feelings. Sarah calls it the 10-year itch. I guess it's a thing, but rather than just keeping that itch to myself and it's like, no, I want to communicate with Sarah. And that's led us to say, well, wow, we really need to communicate about our sexuality with each other because we haven't really done that, and let's let's open ourselves up to learning about our desires. And it does seem like, yeah, it would have been great if we did this 9 years ago, but it's better late than never, and it's better than repressing it. And I think if you're in a healthy monogamous relationship, and this isn't even about like exploring open relationship, but just exploring each other's sexuality, but you might have like these crazy fantasies that you're afraid to share with your partner. And if your partner, I don't want to say really loves you, but like if your partner is committed to you, they are not going to judge you. And they should listen, and they may not agree with it, but then then you navigate it. And then, like you said, there's designer relationships. Then the partner says, well, I'm not really into that kind of fetish, but what if we did this? And, you know, and it's all about compromise and working it out. But if you just don't talk about it, you're just going through like, you're going through life and your relationship at a level that is being repressed, and or it might feel good, but it's not as good as it could be. And I talk about that a lot on this show, in relation to everything in a relationship, that the more you communicate, the more you your deepest desires and dreams just the better you're going to feel, and the more your relationship is going to flourish.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's more about being able to have those conversations than it is about which relationship style you end up choosing. And you got to choose the one that fits the people involved. But, you know, whether it's monogamy or polyamory or swinging or some unique form of designer relationship, again, you've still got to have that communication and that those discussions and be able to continue to put the energy into that relationship, whether it's just the two of you or whether you have other people involved as well. Because for it to be successful, even if there's other people involved, you can't let that new energy of another relationship draw you away. And now you're taking your original partner for granted and you're not putting any energy there. Well, that relationship's going to die. You know, it's like having a plant and not watering it. I mean, eventually it's going to die. So you've got to make sure that you're spreading your energy into all of those and having those communications, and for that to really work, no matter how many people are involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's important. I think you're kind of highlighting it, that this is not a fix to a broken relationship, is to say, oh, okay, let's open up the relationship.
Oh, no.
You know, that's probably yeah, the worst thing you could do. It's going to be, you got to put in the work for your primary relationship first. And that's where the priority is. And I think that's an important note. And on that note, can you talk about, really briefly, the different, you know, open relationships, polyamory, swinging, and what those look like, each of those?
Sure. Polyamory is by definition considered where you have more than one committed relationship. So you might have a spouse and a boyfriend or girlfriend, or some people refer to it as like having a primary and a secondary. And then lately it's kind of becoming more new, where they don't like using terms that indicate a hierarchy. And so they tend to like to think of all of their partners on exactly the same level. And there's just different ways of doing it and what make people comfortable. Where lifestyle or swinging is generally considered to be couples who have more sort of recreational sex with either other couples or other singles that might come into their relationship, but they don't consider that they're in love with the other people. They might be good friends. They might be people they see on a regular basis, but they don't have that sort of deep love type relationship as like people in polyamorous relationships tend to talk about, which is probably the main difference of that.
And then open relationships, how are those different?
Well, open relationships, it's kind of an umbrella term. It really, all of those fall under open relationships. Anything that's not strict monogamy could be considered an open relationship. And those vary widely. A lot of times I kind of like to refer to those as the designer relationships, where it's not quite polyamory, it's not quite swinging. You know, examples of it would be the people who one needs another partner, like the BDSM example I gave you. One needs another partner for that, but the other one really doesn't have another partner. They have the option. They know they have the option if they want it, but they choose not to take it. And it's designed for them. It's everybody's aware of it. Everything's consensual. Nobody's hiding anything. And it works for them. Sometimes I've seen designer relationships where if one half of a partner tends to travel a lot for work and they need more variety, they might do that on the road, but they don't do it at home. And their partner knows. It's been discussed. It's been negotiated. But it's just not something that they do in their home city.
Yeah, there's, I'm sure, endless combinations and of this. And in the end, I think the important thing is communication, obviously, around all of these. And if anything, if you're in an open relationship, it becomes even more critical. But we should have that in all of our relationships. But certainly, like you mentioned, with sexuality and BDSM, like that community is really communicating around sexuality, but we should apply that to all kinds of relationships.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would love to see more of people who are consciously choosing monogamy rather than saying, well, this is what I have to do because this is what I've been told to do. Kind of like we were talking about earlier, where it's just, there's so much shame around it, and you just do it out of expectation rather than going, well, this is what really fits me. And then we talk about it and we decide, well, okay, if it's only going to be us, how are we going to keep it more exciting? What are we going to do? What are we going to talk about? What are we going to try? And keep putting that energy back into the relationship.
I think the more that the culture shifts and this conversation continues, the more that people will be able to consciously choose monogamy or not. And so that is a positive thing that's happening. And Dr. Rhoda, you've given us and our listeners a lot of great information today. And I got one more question for you and then we'll wrap up. In these alternative relationships, and I know there's probably, they can be very complex, but have you worked with couples that are in open relationships and have children? Because that's obviously just a whole other thing to consider and dynamic in how that works.
Absolutely, it is. And yes, and I have. I've known many people in various open relationship styles who have children and how they handle it. Some of it kind of depends on a couple of different factors. It can, A, depend on the age of the children, and also depends on the type of open relationship dynamic that you're in. So, for example, if you have young kids and you're in more of a swinging lifestyle, you're probably not going to tell them much about it. Because these are people who, their kids may see them come over to the house as friends, like for a barbecue, but it's not like they're going to often be having sex with them at home. They may do that elsewhere when they go out for a Saturday night. So it's not something that oftentimes they're doing at home. And so the kids aren't seeing it anyway. And it's no different than a monogamous couple. You're not going to talk to your 5-year-old kids about your sex life.
Right.
Not really appropriate.
Right.
It's different if it's something like polyamory. And now you have this, let's say, third or fourth partner who's an integral part of your relationship, your life. They're coming over to the house all the time. They might actually be spending the night. They might want to move in. Then you're going to have to sit your children down and have this conversation about how there's this other person that you know, that we love, and they're part of this, and you have to explain them to them. And what I often find is that children do as well as the adults do explaining it. So if the adults can be comfortable with it and explain it well, the children are usually fine with it. If the adults are uncomfortable, the children are going to pick up on that. And they're going to go, there's something here that's not quite right. Because you're telling me this, but you're so uncomfortable. But actually, in polyamorous families, the children actually can do quite well. And in many ways, it's like almost that old saying, it takes a village to raise children. You have now more people to take on those kind of parental roles and those caregiver roles. So in many ways, it can do well. The people I've known who've been in swinging and then eventually told their children, it tended to be either later teen or adult children where the kids were figuring it out. And the kids were coming to them going, you guys are doing this, aren't you? And then when your 17-year-old looks you in the eye and says, you guys are doing this, aren't you? You know, how do you, you have to have an answer.
Yeah.
And honesty is probably the best one in that situation.
Yeah. I think in that point, it's kind of like, yes, you know, your mother or father and I are doing this, and this is what we get out of it. And, you know, when you're an adult, you can choose how you want to have your relationship styles. And this is an option for you, but you don't have to. It works for us, but you don't have to do that. And you just have an honest relationship with them and conversation with them about it. And usually from what I've seen of people, that has tended to work best. Oftentimes I've seen it to where their kids find their search history on the computer. And, you know, quite frankly, how else do you have anything but an honest conversation when your 16-year-old has found your computer search for theswingercruise.com as you're planning a cruise? Yeah. It's kind of hard to explain that any other way but honestly.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Rhoda, you've given us and our listeners so much great stuff, and we'll have to have you back on because I think this is an important conversation about sexuality in monogamous relationships and all kinds of relationships, and one that you are certainly, by doing the work you're doing, helping couples and helping to push that conversation forward. So why don't we finish up by having you tell our listeners where they can find you online and if there's any resources you recommend for those wanting to learn more, and then we'll say goodbye.
Okay, thank you. People can reach me at my website, which is drrhoda.com, or send me an email at rhoda@drrhoda.com. I have a new book I published last fall called No More Hiding, Permission to Love Your Sexual Self. It's on Amazon. And a new program that I've launched for new couples trying to get into the open relationship lifestyle. So if people are thinking about making that shift or just started it and are afraid they're not doing it very well, contact me about the program. It's called From Monogamy to Open, How to Have a Successful Transition.
Excellent. Well, we'll have those resources on your show notes page on our website at idopodcast.com. And again, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking to you.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. For more information and the links from the interview today, you can head on over to our website at idopodcast.com, click on the podcast tab, and it will be the first episode there. And while you're on our website, if you are interested in learning more information about our upcoming Hood River Couples Retreat, then click on the retreat tab and you'll be able to find all the information on the retreat. It's going to be at the end of July this summer, and we look forward to it with you guys. It's going to be an awesome couple days in Hood River. It's amazing there. So we hope you join us. And if you are on our website and you're looking for some resources or some tools for your relationship, we really encourage you to check out our 14-day Happy Couple Challenge. It's a free challenge where we send you a daily email for 14 days. And in each email is a doable challenge for that day to do within your relationship. And it's going to help you become stronger, more connected, more intimate. And we know that you're going to enjoy it. We've had some great feedback from all you guys who have done it. And we're so happy that it has helped you in your relationship. So again, all that information is on our website at idopodcast.com. Head on over there. And thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.